I'm Angela Rippon, and you're listening to Siren Radio on 107.3 FM.
Eminently professional, you see. I mean, when you match that against the Sky News reader, try as they might, there's just quality will out, won't it, Stuart?
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
Good morning, Angela Rippon. How are you?
I'm very well, Alex. Thank you. Gosh, that gave us a surprise.
Well, we always like to keep the freshness going on the programme. That's the important thing. And I'm sure you'd attest to that in the days when you used to have this time slot yourself, of course.
Absolutely.
Yes, marvellous. Keep the brightness going. Now, not content with actually being the startlingly wonderful competitor on the Dancing of Ice thing, which, as we said, we spoke to Colleen Nolan and she said, you know, she felt for both yourself and Nadia Sawala, fellow sort of contestants who'd gone through the whole thing. But as I said, Angela, you at least did quite rightly say to that quite challenging member of the judging panel, it's called Dancing on Ice. You know, I love that. That's my comment of the year so far when you're sort of accused of trying to dance on the ice. That's the title of the show, you said.
Yes, it was. I mean, the thing is, I had a wonderful time. I had a great partner in Sean Rice, who's a Canadian international, and he and his wife, Jodine, who, of course, are doing brilliantly with Johnson Bihari at the moment, who's still in the competition.
Indeed.
You know, they've both represented their country in the Olympics, and they're brilliant skaters. And I had 12 wonderful weeks learning how to skate. And Sean was determined that when I went on the ice, I could skate. I mean, I can skate now, which is terrific. And unfortunately, you know, the choice of music, the choice. And I, of course, I had nothing to do with the choice of music or choreography. Mm. That was Jane and Christopher. Mm. So, you know, if they didn't, it was, they weren't probably being very kind to Jane and Christopher, saying that it, I think Jason said that it was dull and safe.
Mm.
But anyway, I thoroughly enjoyed doing it. And the thing is that because I had such fun doing it, I've continued to skate. So I'm not having the sort of level of tuition that I was having before, which was 2 hours a day, 5 days a week for 12 weeks. But I am once a week going for skating lessons still, and I get on the ice whenever I can. And it's such a wonderful sport, and I'm having such a great time doing it, that if nothing else, at least I've got that out of it, that that I've got a new hobby and a new sport to add to the list. And now I'm enjoying it enormously and meeting some lovely people.
I'm just thinking, Angela, given that you're also one of our visiting professors at the School of Journalism here at the University of Lincoln, perhaps we could combine this with, of course, the Lincoln Ice Rink, and maybe you could actually give a lecture on ice. Just a thought.
I think Sean should be the person to give the lecture on ice, because he's the expert, not me. But I'd be very... I tell you what, if you've got a skating club up there, I'd love to come up and join you at some time.
Hey,
that would be fabulous.
There we are. You see, that's how deals are sorted out, Stuart. We have in the studio Angela Stuart McPherson, who's I think theatrical impresario is how we've defined yourself in the times past, because you've developed Upstage Left Theatre Company. Just for the benefit of the listener, and indeed Angela, just give us the background to Upstage Left, how it's developed so far.
Upstage Left was initially a project to try and present new work to Lincoln. A lot of Lincolnshire is sort of stuck in very old traditions of theatre, and I just think we've been looking to try and get something out there that shows new work, that gives people opportunity to be in, to create new work, and that was kind of the idea behind Upstage Left, really. It was set up a couple of years ago, and we've just sort of run with it because we found there is a need, you know, and we weren't just being daft. We didn't come straight into it thinking to ourselves, oh well, maybe this will work, you never know. But actually a lot of people have come to us and said, yeah, this is great, you know, this is exactly what we're looking for. Mm-hmm. It's kind of new, it's modern, and it's something that Lincoln needs, and we truly feel like we're starting to make a difference.
It's a part of the East Midlands. I know we spoke, Angela, when you came up for your first visit a couple of years ago, that in many ways it has been in hibernation, really, when it's come to the cultural arts sector and so on, and surely I would have thought what Stuart is doing is exactly what we need in a time where the climate, shall we say, for cultural arts in general, particularly in the north, can often be a little bit challenging.
I think it sounds absolutely terrific, and I'm sure that Stuart would agree that actually, regardless of whether you have a very vibrant professional theatre in an area or not, you still have people all over the country who want to be involved with theatre, either because they want to go and see it or because they want to be part of it themselves. And that has absolutely nothing to do with their geographical location. There's talent and ability and interest in the theatre all over the country. It just needs to be given an outlet for that to be expressed. And this is why I think all over the country you have wonderful amateur dramatic groups. Because, I mean, I was brought up in the West Country, where we didn't have a professional theatre for many, many years after our wonderful old theatre, the Palace Theatre, was closed down and turned into a bingo hall. And it was years before we had professional theatre. But all the amateur groups absolutely watched in the area because people wanted to be part of theatre. And I don't know how you feel about this. I think it's sort of a natural expression of our interest because we want to sing, we want to dance, we want to act. People actually do very often just want to be taken out of themselves and express themselves in an entirely different way. And sometimes the theatre gives you the opportunity of doing that when perhaps because of your family circumstances or what you do for a living or what people expect of you, you can't ever be a harridan one moment, a great lover the next, a downtrodden school teacher the next, whatever. You can take on so many different guises and personalities in the theatre, either as an observer or a participant, that it's a wonderful way of all of us of actually expressing our inner selves.
Indeed. You see, a masterclass in acting.
Absolutely, yes.
Fantastic. Absolutely. Now, moving on from that, we noticed that recently you're also signed up to do some fantastic work, of course, for Comic Relief, which emerges in a few weeks' time. We've got a variety of things already. Jenny Murray, I believe, is going into stand-up comedy. Fair enough, but people might say she's been doing that for years. But I could obviously comment on that particular area. Angela, what's your connection with Comic Relief this year and how can we support you?
Well, I had this extraordinary phone call from Comic Relief saying they do terrific work, as you know, in this country and all over the world, and particularly at the moment they have an emphasis on what they're doing in Africa, in Kenya. And they asked if I would like to join Lenny Henry, who, of course, is a great supporter of Comic Relief and has been for many years, the actress Samantha Janus, who's having an extraordinary... Stewart, you must be watching what she's doing, this amazing role that she's got in EastEnders at the moment.
Samantha Womack, of course. You
absolutely.
Know, Womack, Janus, it's all the same, yeah, basically. Well, whatever she chooses to call herself. Wonderful
exactly.
person.
Well, Sam, anyway,
exactly.
she used to be. Sam and Reggie Yates, who's an actor and a disc jockey, they asked the four of us if we would be prepared to go and live in Kibera, which is a slum on the outskirts of Nairobi. It's the biggest slum in Africa. There are over a million people in an area which is about a mile square. They live in appalling conditions. They're completely non-people as far as the government of Kenya are concerned. They do not exist. Therefore, they have absolutely no facilities whatsoever. No running water, no electricity, no sewerage. They steal the electricity from the railway line, which runs through the middle of the slum. But they do live in appalling conditions. And they wanted us to go and for 2 one-hour documentaries for the BBC, which are going out on the 3rd and 10th of March, they wanted us to go and live in the slum as Kiberans, and that was what we did. And we arrived in Kibera. They took everything away from us. Literally, we were left standing, not on screen, I have to say, but left standing in our underwear and our boots. They let us keep our boots, but then we had a black bin bag given to us with a selection of clothes which were typical of those that people in Kibera would have been able to afford if they had absolutely nothing. We were given 250 shillings, which it's Kiberan shillings, which is worth about £2.50. And that was what we had to live on for the week. And then we were each taken to an individual part of the slum and left there for 3 days with a camera crew in our face from 6 in the morning till 9 at night. But we had to live as Kiberans and earn our living. And then in the second half of the week, we were put to live with a family, each of us. And I was with six young girls and their mother in a tiny, tiny room, which was about a quarter the size of the average family garage in this country. And that was our experience. And I have to say that it was an amazing experience for me because, you know, I, as most people in this country, live in fairly reasonable and comfortable circumstances, but to live in a tin hut with cockroaches running up the walls and rats on the roof and a running sewer outside the front door, I had to earn my living. I earned my living as a washerwoman for a day. I washed clothes in cold water with carbolic soap for 4.5 hours to earn 200 shillings, which was about 20p. And ended up with my hands completely bleeding because, of course, I'd never done anything quite like that in my life before. My hands are too soft for that. So I spent the second day teaching in a school in Kibera, and I have to say, Alex and Stuart, that was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. I'm not a teacher, and in fact, there was a wonderful moment, which they didn't capture on film, unfortunately, when the headmaster said, are you a teacher? And I said, no. And he looked at me and thought, well, why are you here? And I said, but, and then the light went on in my head and said, but I am a visiting professor of journalism at Lincoln University. And he laughed and said, we've never had a professor here before, I think you can come. But I went to the school because I had to feed myself and I had no money. I literally had no money at all. Mm. And in the schools in Kibera, the children are fed. And I'd worked out that if I could work for a day for my lunch, that was fine. And I wouldn't have to find any other money. But I had these young children and I was teaching them English and using vocabulary and giving them new words that they'd never come across before and getting them to use those words in sentences to, so that they knew what they meant and that I recognised that they understood what they meant. And these young children were like sponges, Alex. They just wanted to soak up education. They had dreams and ambitions to be doctors, to be pilots, to be lawyers, to be teachers, to be professional footballers, to be singers. Wonderful, wonderful ambitions. And all of them had recognised that education was their key to the door that would lead them out of that slum in Kibera to a better life for themselves and their family. It was, I have to say, one of the most uplifting days that I have ever had in my life. And I shall be going back in just over a week's time. On Sunday week, I'm going back to Kibera for 3 days, this time not as a refugee, which is how I was dumped in the settlement in the first place, but going back as a visitor to see how the school is doing. I'm taking books back for the children. I'm taking them back illustrated dictionaries and encyclopedias, and to another school that's run for girls of 16 to 19, the girls who are being given an opportunity to get a higher education and go on perhaps to college or university. Again, I'm taking back some books to help for their library. And it's just, I can't wait to go, actually, to see how the projects that the four of us were involved in are progressing, and to see my class, as I now think of them, in that school, and be able to spend another day teaching with these amazing, amazing young children.
I'm reminded of the old statement that if you can walk a mile in another person's shoes, you can begin to understand them. And I think what you've demonstrated with that lovely narrative, Angela, is the impressive nature of not just the inspirational aspects of the whole thing, but also that whole unique human factor that, yes, we do share the planet, and that sometimes we just lose touch with our brothers and sisters in the world.
It's a most, it was, I have to say, I mean, friends of mine who have subsequently sort of heard my stories, they say that there are two instances that they say really sum me up completely. On the first night, I was making my bed in my little tin shack. We had a little trestle bed, and I was aware that there were cockroaches everywhere. But we did have mosquito nets, and I was busily tucking the mosquito net underneath the mattress so that the cockroaches wouldn't get in. And I just sit back on my heels and say, I've got an open sewer running outside my front door, and I'm worried about doing hospital corners. And it was sort of, and when I lived with the family again, there were cockroaches everywhere. And I woke up in the morning, and there were 8 dead cockroaches in my bed. And I have to say, that was a first.
Indeed so. Normally it's just theatre critics.
You live someone else's life. And yeah. As a reporter, I've spent a lifetime observing and reporting on, but standing, as it were, on the margins. This was an opportunity not just to walk in the shoes, but live the life and inhabit that extraordinary world that is a very, very proud group of people who maintain their dignity, their pride and their ambitions in the most appalling of circumstances. And I have to say it was a very good life lesson for me to see how even in the worst circumstances there can still be that pride and that dignity and that ambition. And I think sometimes perhaps we forget that. And it was no good going in there being a patronising Westerner saying, this is all terrible, I'm going to change it, because I couldn't do that. What I could do was live it and experience it and understand the life that those people lead, and hopefully be able to do something for them in some small way subsequently through the charity, through Comic Relief. But more importantly, to recognise that even in those worst circumstances, people still had great belief in themselves and their families and their futures, and that they had not lost all hope. And that there was actually, I think, one woman I remember saying to Lenny Henry, stop calling this a slum. This is my home. And it's true, that's what it is.
3rd and 10th of March, two dates where you'll definitely ink into the diary in terms of seeing the transmitted versions of those particular aspects. Stuart, any other questions you want to put around?
Just that it's wonderfully interesting, and also I think it must have been so enlightening being out there and being in a situation. I think we all take so many things for granted here, as you say. I think a lot of us live in a reasonable comfort, at least, and it's incredible to hear how the other world lives.
And
I suppose
considerably more life affirming than I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here, I have to say.
Well, it was a bit different. I mean, they really did just give us the equivalent of about £2.50, I think, probably less than that. And of course, they literally took everything away from me. So I had no combs, no brushes, no toothpaste, no toothbrush, no toilet paper, no soap. I had nothing. And if I was going to survive for a few days, I had to spend quite a bit of that money on buying those basic essentials. And in fact, I was saying to a girlfriend the other day that there's been so much talk about mature women on television and how people don't particularly want to see women with wrinkles, and I think that I probably set the cause of women over 60 back several years to come.
Oh, nonsense.
You see the full unexpurgated face of a 66-year-old with no makeup, no moisturiser, absolutely nothing. My hair doesn't see a comb for a week because I just would put my fingers through it, because if it was between having food and buying a comb, I decided that actually I'd rather eat. That you had to leave your ego outside the minute you walked into that community. It really was an extraordinary experience for me, and one that will live with me forever.
Fantastic stuff. And we also have to pass on best wishes, Angela, from both Sarah Gayton, who I think will be in touch with you shortly about the fantastic work she's doing to promote the best work of British food and British agriculture.
Yes,
we spoke about that, so
yes. That's
coming through. Sunny Chivara, one of our MA students, was devastated she had to leave for a 9 o'clock lecture and didn't get a chance to speak to you this morning, but I'm sure things will work out from that basis. We certainly look forward to the 3rd and 10th of March. As ever, it's been inspirational, it's been energetic, it's been just... I always feel that there's an effervescence when Angela joins us, that, other contributors, they try so hard to reach that sort of stage, but she just wipes the floor with them. It's fantastic stuff. So, two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us here on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, Angela?
Alex, it's been terrific. And I tell you what, when I was last at the university before Christmas, speaking with one of your colleagues there, we talked about the possibility of linking some of the students in the senior school at Kibera with Lincoln University through some way or another, either by kind of organising a fundraiser so that we could buy textbooks for the children, or by having some kind of link with students here in Lincoln with the students that are in Kibera, because they do have access occasionally to computers. And I think that would be absolutely terrific, because again, not only would the kids in Kibera gain so much from having a link with a university like Lincoln, but I do feel that particularly the media students, the English students, the psychology students, all of them would gain so much by being able to have a one-to-one conversation via the internet with some of those students in Kibera. I think that it would be a wonderful thing if we could actually establish that, and I hope that over perhaps the next year that's something that we can achieve.
Angela, I think I'll take that a couple of stages further forward, and I'll say quite categorically that we'll throw in the support of Siren FM and indeed Southside Broadcasting to that.
Brilliant.
As well. Yeah, so we shall manifest it.
Thank you. And Stuart, good luck with your project too with the theatre, because I think that is going to be so brilliant for all of those communities that you're going into. It's a great job. Thank you.
Bless you. Thank you very much.
And the final question, Angela, is can we look forward to connecting up with you again in the very near future?
Well, I'm hoping so, yes. I'm talking to the head of the department about when I'm able to come back up again. And as always, of course, it has to fit in with filming commitments.
Oh, exactly.
But I'm looking forward enormously to coming back to Lincoln and again interacting with the students there, because I find them so refreshing. And they do send me away when I go away from there feeling terrific.
We just have to refreshing students. They'll be charging us next. You just have to hold fire a little bit on that particular aspect. I take it telephonically, certainly we'll speak probably this side of Easter.
Alex, thanks very much indeed.
Angela Ruffin, as always, we salute you.
Bye, Jonathan. Okay, up for the week.